Around 3 million years ago, our ancestors took their first steps here. In a land forged by fire and torn apart by the earth itself. From that chaos, a nation unlike any other was born. Towering obelisks still guard the heart of an ancient empire. Man and beast still share an unspoken bond. And churches are carved from solid rock, while others cling to cliffs no human should reach. This is Ethiopia, the birthplace of humanity. ...125 meters below sea level, where the African continent is slowly tearing itself apart. The Afar Triangle, a place where three tectonic plates meet and pull in different directions. Where the Earth's crust thins, where what normally stays hidden rises to the surface. This is the Danakil Depression, and at its heart, Dalol. One of the hottest places on Earth year-round. An average annual temperature of 35 degrees Celsius, 95 degrees Fahrenheit, day after day, month after month. Not peak summer heat that fades with the season. This is non-stop and relentless. The ground here is painted in colours that don't seem real. Sulphur yellow, rust orange, acid green. Streaks of red oxide bleeding through white salt crusts. Hot springs bubble through ancient deposits, dissolving minerals, redepositing them in terraces and pools that shift with the seasons. The water, if you can call it that, is among the most acidic on Earth. Hostile to nearly everything we'd recognize as life. Steam rises from fissures. Volcanic gases force their way up through layers of salt, creating hydrothermal fields that hiss and bubble. The landscape shifts constantly, new pools forming, old ones drying into crystallized plains. Temperatures routinely exceed 50 degrees Celsius, 122 degrees Fahrenheit, sometimes higher. National Geographic once called it the cruelest place on Earth. Wilfred Thesiger, who crossed deserts most wouldn't dare imagine, named it simply a land of death. And in many ways, he was right. Dalol itself, the settlement that once existed here, is now a ghost town. Abandoned. Too extreme even for temporary habitation. There are no trees, no shade, no structures that last. But nearby, the Afar people live. Close enough to work the salt, far enough to survive. Long before sunrise, they're already moving. The miners wake in darkness, the coolest part of the day. The journey to the flats takes 2 hours on foot, sometimes more. They need to arrive early, need to work fast. Because when the sun climbs higher, the heat becomes dangerous. They work with hand tools, axes, chisels and bars, cutting blocks of salt from the ancient seabed beneath their feet. Each block weighs around 30 kilograms, each one worth a few US dollars. In a good day, a miner might cut 10 blocks, maybe 12. A few dollars a day for work that breaks the body. Every day, around 1,000 donkeys and 2,000 dromedary camels gather at the edge of the depression. Patient waiting. Each animal will carry 4 blocks of salt strapped to its sides, sometimes 6 if the journey isn't long. The caravans follow routes worn smooth by millennia, paths that existed long before nations and borders. They move slowly, deliberately, 1 foot in front of the other, hooves on ancient stone. It's not about speed, it's all about endurance here. Further south, another crater, another story written in salt, El Sod, where the earth collapsed inward and left behind a deposit so rich, so pure, it's been valued for centuries. The salt here is darker, dense with minerals, different landscape, same ancient trade. North of the salt flats, Erta Islay rises. For more than a century, since 1906, molten rock has churned in its crater without pause. One of only a handful of permanent lava lakes anywhere on Earth. A pool of fire that never sleeps, never cools, never stops. The same forces pulling this land apart are what keep this lake of lava alive. The same heat that makes survival nearly impossible is the heat that built this whole place. Perhaps there's a reason this land feels ancient. Ethiopia is one of the world's oldest countries, but the ground beneath it is older still. In the Afar region, not far from here, researchers found Lucy in 1994, 3.2 million years old, walking upright. Then Ardi, 4.4 million years old, both discovered in this same harsh landscape. Both rewriting what we thought we knew about where we came from. But there's more. Further south in the Omo Valley, a place we'll travel to soon, bones of anatomically modern humans. Our species, 200,000 years old. The evidence suggests something profound. That we, Homo sapiens, may have taken our first steps in this region's ancient landscapes. In places of extremes where heat and aridity tested life, survival demanded constant adaptation. From such challenges, humans emerged. But we weren't the only ones shaped by this land. North, where the land rises into highlands, other species adapted to extremes of their own. The rarest canid in the world lives here, the Ethiopian wolf. Rust-red coat, long legs built for these high-altitude grasslands. They hunt alone, patient, watching. A mole rustles beneath the surface. The wolf listens, calculates, then jumps, dives headfirst into the earth. Sometimes it misses. The ground betrays nothing. But when it connects, the catch is swift. Back at the den, cubs wait, tumbling over each other, fighting for scraps. A successful hunt means everyone eats. Higher still, in pockets of forest that cling to the mountainsides, black and white colobus monkeys moving through their canopy with an elegance that seems impossible for their size. Long white mantles flowing as they leap. And in the dense undergrowth below, mountain nyala, spiral-horned, elusive, found nowhere else on Earth. But it's the Simien Mountains that define this landscape. Formed millions of years ago, before the Great Rift Valley even existed. Massive volcanic eruptions built layer upon layer of basaltic lava. ...3,000 meters thick in places, the remnant of an ancient shield volcano. Then, over millions of years, erosion carved something extraordinary. A plateau fractured into jagged peaks, deep valleys, and sheer cliff faces, some dropping 1,500 meters straight down. The northern cliff wall alone stretches for 35 kilometers. The roof of Africa. At its heart, Ras Dashen, 4,550 meters above sea level, Ethiopia's highest peak. On slopes that would make most animals turn back, the Walia ibex. Endemic to these mountains, found nowhere else. Watch them move, hooves finding purchase on stone that seems impossibly steep. Near vertical terrain crossed as if it were flat ground, effortless. During mating season, the males rear up, horns meeting with a crack that echoes off the cliffs. A test of strength on the edge of nothing. And then the geladas. They're not quite baboons, though they're often called that. They're something else entirely. The chest gives them away, a patch of bare skin, red, sometimes pink, always vivid. In males, it turns bright red during their prime. In females, it blisters during reproduction. They live in groups that seem impossibly large. Sometimes 30 individuals, sometimes 600. A mass of bodies spread across the plateau. Each group has a structure. One male, several related females. The females are in charge. If the male no longer suits them, they replace him. They eat grass, almost exclusively, spending their days on the ground, plucking blades with dexterous fingers, moving slowly across the mountainside like a living carpet. The world's most terrestrial primate, except for us. They don't climb trees. Can't, really. 99% of their time is spent on the ground. But watch what happens when tensions rise. An alpha male displays, rearing up, baring teeth. When hierarchies shift, when territories overlap, when a younger male challenges, the troop erupts. Hundreds of gelatas sprinting, a blur of fur and dust and sound. It looks like war. Maybe it is. Then, just as quickly, it's over. Back to grazing, back to grooming, back to the steady rhythm of mountain life. Babies tumbling over each other, playing, testing their limits, perched on cliff edges that would make your stomach drop. They belong here. In a way, few animals do. For millions of years, these highlands shaped life. Then, barely a blink ago in geological time, humans arrived. This is Ethiopia's ancient heart, where belief became architecture, where devotion meant carving entire churches from solid rock. Aksum, one of the ancient world's great powers, named alongside Rome, Persia, and China. The oldest kingdom in Africa. A civilization that controlled vast trade routes linking the Roman Empire to the Middle East and India. The first African civilization to mint its own coins. Ties to Greece and Rome ran deep. The name Ethiopia itself comes from Greek. The obelisks still stand, towering stately, some 1,700 years old, marking the locations of royal burial chambers. One weighs 160 tons, carved from a single piece of granite. Transported, raised, a statement in stone about power that would not fade. Among the ruins, the remains of palaces, stone foundations where queens and kings once walked. The architecture speaks of wealth, of connections to distant empires, of a kingdom that knew it was equal to any power on earth. And then there's the claim that still echoes. Ethiopians believe they possess the Ark of the Covenant, the gold chest that held the stone tablets of the Ten Commandments. Supposedly brought here by royalty, stolen from Jerusalem, hidden in Ethiopia, protected ever since in the Church of Mary of Zion. No one can see it, no one can verify it. Only one guardian monk is allowed inside. Whether true or not, the belief has shaped this place for millennia. Icons, paintings, stories passed down through generations. In the 4th century, Ethiopia embraced Christianity, one of the first kingdoms to do so. Alongside Armenia, it remains one of the two oldest Christian states on earth. But when the Prophet Muhammad's first followers faced persecution, they fled to Aksum. Ethiopia gave them refuge, a Muslim sanctuary in a Christian kingdom. Christianity and Islam, side by side, not a frontier of conflict, but a bridge of faith. And that faith didn't just take root here. It became architecture, obsession, legacy, creating some of the most unique sanctuaries on earth. This can be seen south in Lalibela, where one king had a vision. Saint Gebre Meskel Lalibela, ruler in the 12th century. His goal, to create a new Jerusalem. A pilgrimage site for those who could not make the journey to the Holy Land. So he began to carve. Not building upward, carving downward. 11 churches, each one hewn from a single unbroken piece of rock. No blocks, no mortar, no assembly, just stone removed. Beta Georgis, the Church of Saint George, the most famous of all of them, shaped like a cross, carved 15 meters down into the earth. From above, it looks like a vision, a monument that shouldn't exist. Below ground, tunnels connect the churches. Passageways carved through solid rock. Dark, cool, sacred. Pilgrims move between them in silence. 800 years later, they still come. We move further north into the highlands of Tigray, a landscape of stone and sky, where the earth itself seems carved by divine hands. Monasteries cling to cliff sides here, not built on the rock, built into it. Carved from the mountain itself, hollowed out, sanctified, accessible only to those willing to climb. The most extreme of which is Abuna Yemata Gu, a church 2,580 meters above sea level. Carved into a sheer cliff face. To reach it, you must climb, not a path, a scramble, handholds and footholds chiseled into rock centuries ago. At points, the route narrows to a ledge barely wide enough for your feet. A fall means certain death. The climb passes an open-air tomb, the skeletal remains of priests who served here. Who died here. Yet according to Father Asefa, who climbs this route every single day, No one has ever fallen. Protected, he says, by the patron saint. Inside, the walls are painted. Biblical figures, saints, angels, original frescoes preserved by altitude and isolation, colours that have lasted centuries because almost no one can reach them. Why build a church here? Why make worship this difficult? Perhaps it's the point. Faith that costs nothing means nothing. South from Aksum, another capital rose. Gondar, imperial city, founded in the 17th century. For 200 years, it was the seat of Ethiopian emperors, a city of castles, of churches, of power consolidated behind walls. At the heart of Gondar stands Fasil Gebi, the royal enclosure. Stone walls, towers, castles that blend African, Arab, and European styles into something entirely Ethiopian. These walls have witnessed centuries, royal coronations, brutal civil wars, foreign occupations, and finally, liberation. The castle walls still standing. Every January, Gondar transforms. Timkat, the festival celebrating the baptism of Jesus in the River Jordan. Thousands gather, priests in ornate robes, believers draped in white. They carry the tabot, replicas of the Ark of the Covenant, wrapped in rich fabrics. Processions wind through the streets, singing, chanting, drums and bells. The faithful follow. Some dance, some pray, some walk in silence. At the water, they gather, baptism reenacted. A renewal of faith. The colours are overwhelming. White robes against bright umbrellas, gold crosses catching the sun. A living tradition, centuries old, still vibrant, still essential. Ethiopia carries a distinction almost no other African nation can claim. It was never colonized. When Italy invaded in 1896, Ethiopia's army met them at Adwa. 100,000 against 17,000. A decisive Ethiopian victory that shocked Europe. The first time an African nation defeated a European power in modern warfare. Italy returned in 1935 under Mussolini. Brutal, chemical weapons, 5 years of occupation. But occupation is not the same as control. Ethiopia never fully submitted. And when World War II consumed Italy on multiple fronts, Ethiopia liberated itself. Emperor Haile Selassie led Ethiopia through those years. 1930 to 1974, he abolished slavery, modernized the country. But his influence reached far beyond Ethiopia. To the Rastafarian movement, he was regarded as the messiah of all black people. Ethiopia, uncolonized, unconquered, became the birthplace of the Rastafarian faith. Not far from Gondar, the Blue Nile falls. Tiz Isat, smoking water. During the rainy season, the falls span 400 meters. Water thunders over the edge. Mist rises like smoke. The roar is constant, deafening. This is the Blue Nile, one of the world's great rivers. It flows from Lake Tana, north through Sudan, joining the White Nile in Khartoum, feeding Egypt, sustaining millions. And it starts here, in the Ethiopian highlands. This land doesn't just hold history, it shapes the world. East to Harar, we encounter one of Islam's holiest cities. 82 mosques within its ancient walls. A walled city, narrow streets, markets dense with spices and textiles. This is where Islam put down roots so deep, the city became known as the fourth holiest in the faith. And at night, something unexpected. For centuries, hyenas prowl the edges of Harar. Scavengers. Threats. Then someone decided to feed them. Now, every night, men call into the darkness. Food is thrown. The hyenas approach. Wary at first, they eat what's offered, gradually drawing closer. Watch what happens next. A pact centuries old between the city and the wild. That understanding between humans and the natural world runs even deeper in the south, where some of humanity's oldest cultures still live in rhythm with the land. Far from the highlands, far from the rock-hewn churches. The Omo Valley, a different Ethiopia, where the land flattens into savanna and the river becomes lifeline. This is one of the most culturally diverse regions on Earth. Dozens of tribes, each with their own language, their own traditions, living as their ancestors did for thousands of years. The Omo River cuts through the valley. During the rainy season, it swells. Brown water carrying nutrients downstream. In the dry season, it narrows, but it never stops. Everything here depends on it. Crops, cattle, life itself. The river is the reason these communities exist. Cattle are everything here. Not just food, not just wealth, identity. A man's worth is measured in his herd. Marriages are arranged with cattle as bride price. Songs are sung about favourite bulls. Names are given in honour of cattle. The Hamar people take this bond further. When a boy becomes a man, he must prove it by running across the backs of bulls, 4 times without falling. If he succeeds, he's a man, eligible to marry, respected. The Hamar live in settlements scattered across the valley. Huts built from wood, mud, and thatch. Simple, functional. Women wear elaborate beaded jewelry, copper and iron coils around their necks and arms. Celebrations that bind the community, that mark occasions, that keep traditions alive. Life moves with a rhythm of seasons, planting, harvest, ceremony. It's a life unchanged for generations, measured not in years, but in rituals, in community, in continuity. The Karo are fewer, maybe 1,500 people remain, but their artistry endures. Body painting, elaborate designs in white chalk and yellow mineral rock. Faces and torsos transformed into living canvases. Each pattern tells a story of status, of celebration, of belonging. The Suri, warriors, renowned for Donga stick fighting. Young men face each other with long poles, testing strength, earning respect. Bruises and broken bones are common, but to the Suri, this is how manhood is proven. The valley opens into Margo National Park, where the tribe's grazing lands meet true wilderness. Acacia trees dotting the horizon, grasslands stretching endlessly, the same landscape that has pulsed with life for millennia. But not all of that life is friendly. Along the river, hippos surface, deceptively calm. They're among Africa's most dangerous animals. The river belongs to them. Nile crocodiles lurk beneath the surface. Ancient predators, armored, waiting. And in the bush, the black mamba, Africa's longest venomous snake. Fast, nervous, and absolutely lethal. Ethiopians have cultivated this land for millennia, and in doing so, gave the world something it didn't know it needed. Ethiopia gave the world coffee. The story goes that a goat herder noticed his flock drawn to a particular bush. The animals ate the red berries and became energized. He tried one himself. His day's work was notably more efficient. From that moment in the Ethiopian highlands, coffee spread across the globe. But here, it remains sacred. The coffee ceremony, beans roasted by hand over coals, the smoke wafts through the room, a blessing. Ground with mortar and pestle, brewed in a clay pot called a jibina. Served in three rounds, each with a name, each with a meaning. The first, a bowl, the strongest, the awakening. The second, toner, balanced, for conversation. The third, baraka, blessing. It's not just drinking coffee, it's a tradition practiced for centuries that now fuels the world. And coffee isn't Ethiopia's only gift to global trade. Cultivation here runs deep. Spices, grains, goods that have moved through Ethiopian markets for millennia. In towns like Alaba Kulido, the rhythm of commerce continues. Markets dance with spices. Turmeric, cardamom, berber, bartering, haggling. The same exchanges that have sustained communities throughout history. Modernity has an erased tradition here. They coexist. In 1983, Ethiopia's population was 38 million. Today, it's over 135 million, the 10th largest country in the world. A young population, rapidly urbanizing, hungry for opportunity. And in Addis Ababa, the future is rising. Ethiopia's capital sits at 2,355 metres above sea level, higher than almost any other major capital on Earth. And it's climbing in other ways too. The skyline is transforming. The Commercial Bank of Ethiopia headquarters, 53 floors, 209 metres tall, a $300 million statement. The tallest building in Ethiopia, 8th tallest in Africa. And at the heart of the city, the African Union headquarters. Futuristic, bold, symbolic. Ethiopia, home to one of humanity's oldest civilizations, now hosts the institution shaping Africa's future. A seat at the table. A voice that carries weight. Beside the modern towers, Bol Medhane Alem Cathedral, one of the largest Orthodox cathedrals in Africa. A reminder that faith and progress are not competing here. In 2019, Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed challenged Ethiopians to plant trees. 40 seedlings each. They planted 350 million in a single day. A world record. A generation planting the future. Ethiopian athletes continue rewriting records. Yomif Kejelcha, Gudaf Chigai, Tigs Tasefa. Names that echo across stadiums. Runners bred in high-altitude highlands, redefining what's possible. Pride for a nation. Inspiration for the world. Humanity's first steps were taken here, in the Afar Heat, 3 million years ago. Since then, empires rose and fell. Invaders came and left. The world changed around it. And now Ethiopia's gaze is forward, toward a future it's building itself. You think Ethiopia was extreme? Then wait until you see Russia, a land too vast, too brutal, and too misunderstood. Click now to see the side the news will never show you.